Welcome back for another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. We'll get to our review of The Grudge today. If you are listening to this on Tuesday, it is the 20-year anniversary of The Grudge. I want to remind you guys to follow us on Instagram. And tomorrow, we are going to post some of your suggestions, and we are going to spin a wheel, and we will determine what the final month of the movie is going to be. I'm really excited. I have absolutely no clue. We're going to film it later today. We'll post it tomorrow on Instagram. So, Bad Movies Worst Opinions on Instagram. Be sure to give us a follow and you will see what the final movie of the month is going to be. Excited to get through October and get back to watching some non-scary movies, but right now it is spooky season on the podcast. All right, enough of me. Let's get to the movie. Here is The Grudge. All right, welcome into another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast. We believe everybody has a favorite bad movie, and the only rule of the podcast is that we must watch a movie that's rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. Today is the 20-year anniversary of The Grudge. One of my best friends, Joshua Nickens, joins us in the studio today to review one of your favorite movies from the DVD era.
Hey, what's going on, my guy? Just here to talk about one of my favorite bad movies out here, especially October coming up. You know, we got the Halloween season. I love it.
The plot for The Grudge: an American nurse living and working in Tokyo is exposed to a mysterious supernatural cause, one that locks a person in a powerful rage before claiming their life and spreading it to another victim. The Grudge is rated a 5.9 on IMDb. The release date for The Grudge is October 22nd of 2004, has a runtime of 91 minutes. You can watch this movie currently on Peacock. This movie had a budget of $10 million, made $187.3 million at the box office. This feels like a movie that you saw in the movie theater.
You know what? Actually, I don't think I saw this movie in the theater. See, these are one of those movies that I kind of got introduced to once The Ring came around. My uncle showed it to me, and then he showed me the Japanese version of The Ring. And then after that, I was kind of hooked because just seeing how they did it in America and then going back and watching the source material. So then, no, I didn't see this in theater, but once it came out on DVD, I had to see it.
Let's go to the box office for October 22nd. Back in 2004, The Grudge debuted at $39 million. Shark Tale was number two at 14.3. Shall We Dance was at 8.6. Friday Night Lights, my favorite sports movie that's not Rocky, is number four that week. And Team America World Police. Team America World Police seems like a movie that should be rated below a 6.0, but it's probably not.
Yeah, it's one of those movies, you know, people seem to love it just because of how dumb it was. I think it kind of reminds me of, you remember Kablam back on
yeah,
all that?
I do yeah, remember.
It's kind of got that feel to it, only just taken up to where, you know, kids can't watch it. So, people go out and see that movie.
Do you like The Grudge more or The Ring more?
That's a tough one.
Because you and I have seen enough movies together. The Grudge is just right up your alley in 2004.
It is. That's right in my neighborhood. But I guess it just depends on what mood I'm in. I mean, because The Grudge is a fun time, but as far as the ports, in The Ring is the superior movie.
All right, before we get to the movie, we have to ask all of our new guests this. What is the worst movie that you've ever seen in theater? What is your least favorite candy?
It's Sucker Punch.
The worst movie I've ever seen in theaters, bro.
We sat there together, and
we both were so excited about that movie, too.
And we were both ready to walk out probably about a good 20, 30 minutes in. That movie was atrocious.
What's your least favorite candy?
Probably those Sour Jacks we got from Blockbuster that one time. You know, it tastes like soap.
No, I remember. Those did absolutely taste like the lemon one. That was the one that was trash.
It was straight Dawn dish soap. I mean, we had Joy and Dawn sitting right in the box. It was terrible.
So the cast for this movie: Sarah Michelle Gellar is Karen Davis. She is an exchange student. Jason Baer is the boyfriend. William Matopper, I don't know how you pronounce this man's name. His name is Matthew Williams. He was relocating for a promotion. Clea DuVall, she was the wife. Katie Strickland, that is Susan Williams. That is the sister of Matthew. Bill Pullman is also in this movie. His name is Peter Kirk. He is the college professor. He also, I think, claims a record in this movie. I don't think that any person was in a movie living for a shorter amount of time than Bill Pullman was. I mean, we didn't even get to the title screen of the movie. Man's already passed away.
Good morning, Peter. Are you okay?
That's the weird thing about The Grudge, because, yeah, you could say that he had the quickest on-screen death, but then, you know, as you'll see later, The Grudge is not necessarily told in order. Depending on how you arrange the movie, yeah, technically, runtime-wise, yeah, he out of here early, but as far as the timeline is concerned, probably one of the second, third people that might have died. I don't know. It's weird.
I mean, anytime you die before Jada Pinkett Smith died in Scream 2, you didn't do something right.
Yeah, you did take a real big L if you died faster than Jada in Scream 2.
Instantly, her and Omar Epps died in 4 minutes. Bill Pullman died. He was the first thing you see. He wakes up. He got a little PYT with him. Next thing you know, he takes a header off the concrete.
Let me tell you something. That scene, you know, when you first watch the movie, the very first time you see it, yeah, it's kind of jarring. But after you've watched the movie as many times as I have, and then after watching Scary Movie 4, like, that scene is just silly. I mean, he hits the ground. He's laying there like Peter Griffin after he fell down the stairs. It's terrible.
So that's how the movie begins. We then meet a young Asian caregiver. Her name is Yoko, who stops by to check on an elderly woman named Emma. But something is off. She hears some creaking noises and goes to check on them. Well, that's the last we see of her because she gets gobbled up by some creature in the closet. We meet Sheriff Michelle Geller, a.k.a. Karen Davis. She is on the job now due to Yoko's disappearance. And she finds a suspicious door that is boarded and taped up. Most people would say boarded up door, taped up. Maybe I shouldn't be going in here. Clearly, someone doesn't want you in there, but she hears a cat that sounds like it's in distress. She opens the door. Inside, there's a little boy trapped in a closet. She also finds a book. You want to know what gets white people killed in these movies?
Being too curious?
Curiosity.
Every time.
Every single time.
Not only is it curiosity, but not looking at all the red flags that you've seen along the way while you're being curious. Okay, so your boss tells you that the last person that he sent to the house went there, didn't check back in, ain't called back, didn't come to work today. You get there, and there's clearly a bike sitting outside. So you pass the bike. You know your boss said the last person didn't show back up. And then you see a taped up door in the house, and you ain't put it together. The old lady's just laying there looking crazy and dilapidated.
She said zero words the whole movie.
Zero.
She had no script, no line. Can you imagine?
Well, she said like four words. She was like, she won't leave me alone.
No, she did. Okay, she said one sentence. Can you imagine whenever they do the casting call and they bring that old woman Emma and they're like, hey, what are you looking for? Like, I can give you some emotional range. We need you to play half dead. That's what we need you to do for 2 hours. Can you do that?
Yes, I
think I got it.
We need you lost and old. That's all we need from you.
You know, that's a great description of her character, lost and old. Every time you saw her on the screen, she looked lost and old. So inside this book that was in the closet is a picture of the president from Independence Day, the man who committed suicide at the very beginning of the movie. She also finds a picture of the little boy that was trapped in the closet with his family, but the mom's face is missing. Emma is now back in her room. That's the old woman. And she tells Karen the only line she has, quote, I just want her to leave me alone. We don't know who she is, but we are soon about to find out. While Karen is putting Emma to bed, a shadowy black figure appears over the bed. I am curious to get your thoughts on this before we move forward in the plot. How do you think the CGI held up in this movie now 20 years later?
I don't think it's bad. I don't have a problem with the CGI. For this movie, I think, you know, they did really well. And my thing about it is I always compare it to the source material. The source material kind of had a little more practical. And so, of course, when you bring it over here, you're trying to play it up a little bit and you have a little more money. So, of course, you know, you make it look good. And it looks better. But I don't know. Something about the way they did it practically, or at least in Japan, seems a little more unsettling. But CG-wise, it did hold up.
It didn't bother me until the very end of the movie. Like, I thought the final 5 minutes of the movie with the CGI got kind of ridiculous, but we got time to get there. The ending of the movie is kind of stupid.
It is. I agree.
Yeah. All right. So this is where you mentioned the movie is not in any kind of chronological order. So we take our first flashback. We go back to when Emma's children are buying the house. Even back then, Emma is acting weird, and this should have been a sign. Her mom is looking around, and y'all didn't just notice something was off in this?
Two things. Not only was the mom off, but they catch up with the guy who's trying to sell them the house, and he's in the bathroom sweating and scared in the corner.
and you don't see the dirty water?
The dirty water's still in the tub, even though he's got the drain closer in his hand. He's sweating, his jacket's on the floor, and you're still like, oh, we'll take the house. What?
They couldn't wait. They was ready to move to Japan any means necessary. Yo, you need to. We got to get this house. We got to close this sale.
Hey, we got this old trap house for you. You want it? Yeah, I'll take it.
They didn't even really do no tour. They saw two rooms. They saw the upstairs to go get their mom. They saw the bathroom sold.
While the mom is still staring at the corner, you're asking her what's wrong. You see that room, you see the bathroom, and you're sold. You ain't had no inspection done, nothing. You ain't bring nobody to tell you anything about the house. Nobody's told you that everybody that's been in there last got packed up, nothing.
You had no information.
None.
So the family is still in the early stages of the move. The mom is sleeping all day, which is really a theme for her character. The wife hates it over here, but Matthew's got this new fancy job in Japan, and he wants his wife to give it a chance before they decide to move back to the States. Emma is awake in her room, and Jen, the wife, notices a mess of ramen noodles and also some little footprints. She follows the prints to find a black cat from earlier in the movie. Now she's following the cat. She sees the cat get picked up by a mysterious pair of hands. She then follows the mysterious pair of hands into a room. Door closes. Last time we see her character alive.
You and your husband know that y'all didn't come here with a child. You came there with your mom and your sister-in-law. Why on earth would you follow child footprints, especially if they led to a black cat? You might not be superstitious, but that's stupid. It's dumb. Why would you do that?
That's not your cat, and that's not your baby.
Exactly. And you could clearly tell, you know a child, even if you don't have a child, you know a child's hand and footprints because they're sizably smaller than anybody that's in the house. Why would you follow those to where they're going? I would say, you know what? I'm already not selling in. Mom's been acting weird. This house was weird when we moved in. I think I'm going to go stay in a hotel for a little while. At least give yourself a chance. You don't have a chance, as we know, but give yourself a chance.
We wouldn't have any horror movies if white people stayed in a hotel. We basically wouldn't have the whole entire Paranormal Activity series. The whole concept of the Paranormal Activity series is weird shit is happening at home, but I'm going to sleep here anyway. That's the whole thing.
I've seen this before. We should probably go stay in a hotel. No. We'll record it. We'll get through this. And then when the person is finally like, you know, we should go, the other one's like, let's stay.
My favorite part about scary movies is no one in a scary movie acts like they've ever seen a scary movie before.
Except for the scary movies where they're actually making fun of the fact that people act like that in scary movies. Like Scream is great for pointing this out.
The husband comes home from work to see that the place is completely trashed. The mom is still where he last left her. The husband goes upstairs to find his wife, and it looks like she's been possessed by some kind of spirit. Catboy is hiding under the bed and pops back to get the husband, too. He is 3 for 3 with this family. Incredible accuracy. Yo, he was picking them people off. He was picking up the Williams family left and right. He ran through the whole crew.
Little homie couldn't miss. What kills me is that this man sees his wife in the same catatonic state his mom's in and does not call the hospital. She was healthy when you guys got there. Why wouldn't you immediately get her out the house? You're trying to shake her and get her attention. She's laying there with her eyes wide, dilated, and her mouth open. Call the doctor, man.
So back to present day, the head of the care center comes to check on Karen and Emma, but they are curled up in the corner from their interaction with the shadowy figure. The police is back on the case. Matthew is missing. Karen is headed to the hospital for observation. Yoko is also missing. Something is off about this house. The voicemail was from Matt's sister, who also lives and works in Tokyo. The police locate the missing phone from the base, find some hair, investigate the attic, and find a piece of tongue. What was that? They didn't show it long enough. What was in the attic?
That was Yoko's lower jaw.
So kind of a piece of tongue. Her whole bottom mouth just ripped out.
I know we'll get to it later, but if you remember in the scene where the lead caretaker was leaving work late and he sees Yoko kind of walking, he's like, Yoko, what happened? Where you been?
Yeah.
And she turns around and her tongue is basically hanging down. Like her jaw's gone. So no, there's no tongue because it's all still in her mouth. That was just her bottom jaw and then her tongue's just dangling.
Man, I miss the cordless phone era. There weren't a lot of things that could get you trouble at 12 and 13, but you know what was number one on the list? Leaving the cordless phone off the base, bro.
No.
Because my mom's going to use the phone, and now the cordless phone don't work.
And then she got to look for it, too.
Oh, goodness.
Especially if it didn't have that locate button on there. Oh, my God.
Yeah, no, you was cooked out there.
You catching an L that night.
100%. So, Karen.
And you got to find it.
No, definitely. And it better not take too long to find it, too.
Because you got to make that call.
100%. So, Karen wakes up in the hospital with her boyfriend by her side. We learn that Emma, the mom, has passed away. Something continues to be wrong in the house. The sister is leaving for work, and there's some more creepy noises that appear.
Hey, guys. It's Susan. Matt, are you there? Pick up. Okay, well, I'm leaving work now, so can try my cell or give me a call at home later. I'm just a little worried about Mom. I just want to make sure she's okay.
I actually forgot this about the movie. That sound, that was a big deal in 2004, 2005.
Yes, the death rattle.
Yeah, that was, I didn't remember much about this movie, but once that sound kept coming up, I was like, oh, I've seen this before.
If you recall, if you really think about it, a lot of those movies around those times, the horror movies specifically, had a signature sound. Like The Ring had where the tape started and the static. The Grudge had the death rattle. One Missed Call had the ringtone. Like, each of those movies had kind of like a signature sound that made you think about it when you heard it. So, you know, that was just kind of a thing. I don't know if it was intentional, but it definitely was a thing.
So the sister is leaving for work and some more creepy noises appear. Speaking of creepy noises, the sister's phone rings and it's Matthew. But is it Matthew? We get more creepy noises. Well, it's time to go because a creepy shadow of figure is now in the work stairway. She runs to tell security. They go to investigate. She sees the figure on the surveillance cam. For the first time in the entire movie, someone finally runs away. The sister was the only one to realize, yo, something's going on here. I need to get out of here.
You know what? This might actually be my favorite sequence in the movie. Like, I feel like even though it's a shot-for-shot recreate, most of this movie is a shot-for-shot recreation of Ju on the Grudge anyway. This is probably my favorite sequence. I think they actually shot it a little bit better than the Japanese one. Just watching him looking at her each floor on the elevator. And, you know, the shadow coming out when the security guard goes to check. And, yeah, like you said, she actually was smart enough to at least try and run away.
Well, back at the sister's apartment, it looks like the weird cat boy has followed her home. Why is her name outside the building and when she lived? Did you notice that when she was walking in, it said, like, S. Williams on there? Like it was her classroom or something. Did you notice that?
Like on her door?
Yeah.
I ain't paying no attention. Yeah. I have to go back and look
go
at that.
Go back and watch that. I missed that. You know what I don't want outside my apartment door?
My name.
My name. I don't want that.
Mailbox is fine. The actual door, no.
Yeah, I don't want that. So Matthew calls the house phone. He's downstairs. He gets buzzed up, but he comes up the stairs way too fast. You have to know that's not Matthew.
Another red flag that...
You have to realize this. If I say, yo, I'm downstairs, let me buzz you in, and instantly it's, bro, hold on now. You ain't Usain Bolt, bro. I seen you move before. You ain't that fast.
Unless your brother's Nightcrawler.
Yeah, what's going on here? So the creepy noise is back on the phone, and Susan runs back into the house. Well... It doesn't matter. The creepy shadow of figure is now back inside the house. It snatches her out of the bed. That's the last time we see the sister. I will say this. They have this award show on the Rewatchables podcast. They call it the Dion Waiters Award. Who made the most out of their appearance on screen? Mm-hmm. If we were giving that out, I got to give it to the sister.
Yeah,
the sister made most of her 6 minutes in the movie.
So I got a question for you. So you seen how in this scene, when she lifted the blanket up and the face is just there like, almost pops out at her. Which would you think is creepier, that or that same scene, but when you lift up the blanket, the head's just laying there like she's just been chilling there the whole time?
Probably the second one.
Yeah,
probably the second one.
That's how they did it in Ju-on. So they played it up a little bit, but in Ju-on, she's just laying there.
That
just
sounds like the extreme version of this one. This one seems like a toned down version from how you're describing it to me.
The Japanese one is toned down, but I think that's what makes it more unsettling. Like, she was laying there like she had been cuddling on your lap the whole night, watching a movie.
Karen is now being interviewed by the police at the hospital, and she tells them what we all know. Something about this house is not right. The police believe that Matthew killed his wife and then himself, but we all know that's not true. The police learned that something has happened to the sister, and her apartment was locked from the inside, but no one was there. We finally learned that something happened in the attic 3 years ago, and this is the first family to live inside the house. One of my biggest complaints with the movie is something you mentioned earlier about it not being in order. Like, we know that something is up. Man, we don't find out until the end of Act 2, early Act 3. Yo, who is this little weird cat? Why does this cat matter? Who is this little boy? Why is this house haunted? We don't learn any of that until probably an hour into the movie.
Most horror movies, you kind of want them to at least keep the mystique going for a little while, just, you know, to keep you engaged. You don't want to get the exposition dump or be told right away. So, I mean, I can't really fault them too much for that. My brain goes to the sheer ripple effect, because we know people go in the house die. That whole precinct was down there doing forensics and fingerprints and stuff. That's a whole precinct gone.
Didn't none of them die except the cop?
I mean, they didn't die on screen, but they're not alive.
Oh, you think that's like an unanswerable question? What happens to the other people that was in the house doing the investigative work?
I mean, by rule,
if you go
logic of the movie, you go in the house, you cook. So each one of them got haunted and hunted down. It's just that we only focused on the main detective, Karen, and the Williams family.
So Karen finally tells her boyfriends her feelings about the house, and now the thing is following her. It's on the bus and it's in the shower. The director of the care center is leaving work, and now he sees things as Walking Dead Yoko shows up at the gig. Karen does one of my favorite things they do in a scary movie. She finally gets on the internet to Google what had happened. This whole movie could have been saved if the buyers of the house had done this in the very beginning of the movie. They always do this an hour in. What happened at this address? And then they just uncover, wait, there was a fire in 1912? Everybody died in this house? Wait, that person is now coming back to haunt me? I love a good Google search in a horror movie.
There's nothing funnier than the early 2000 Ask Jeeves search for what happened at the house or to this family that's all of a sudden haunting you. It's hilarious.
Every single time it gets me, man. I love it. It is a real good staple. Like, wait, we could use the internet to solve these crimes. Yeah, no, you can. The internet's full of information. Karen goes to see Maria, the widow from the very beginning of the movie, who was with the president from Independence Day. And now she's going through some old pictures. We get another flashback as we follow Bill Pullman to the strange house where he spots the little boy who appears to be all alone. Karen goes to the police with her findings, and the cops, they seem to know all of this information already. The detective has seen enough, and it's time to take matters into his own hands. He's going to the house to burn that mother down. Upon entering the house, he hears a kid crying, coughing and splashing around. Of course, he falls for it. There's no child in danger, and now he is in danger and gets drowned by the ghost pops.
I don't want to deter from this section of the movie, but can we just take a minute and recognize how Kyoko is pretty much the on the Mount Rushmore of stalkers? Because when Karen went to the widow and started looking at the pictures, like, she's in every single outdoor picture. How? That's elite level stalking.
Shadowy right figure.
The greatest photo bomber of all time.
Yeah, who doesn't love a great shadowy figure? Karen knows something's up with the house.
Yeah.
The detective knows that something is up with the house.
He said exactly what it was that was up with the house.
And he is going there to burn it. He falls for the sounds.
That irritated me to no end. You said yourself it's a curse there at the house.
And then you fell for the curse.
The minute you hear a scratch on the wall, you stop to go here see what it is. You fell for the bathtub jig. Bro, just burn the house down.
That's all you had to do. You would have lived. Movie would have ended right then and there.
I don't want to say it would have ended, well, because I've seen the second movie, of course. But still, in your mind, this will end it. Burn the house down.
That's all you had to do. But no, he had to try to go be top cop, top flight security in the world, Craig.
I hear a child.
Now he's out of here. So we end up back at Karen's house. Her boyfriend is worried about her, so he leaves her a voicemail. A lot of voicemails in this movie. They loved a good voicemail in this movie. Alex is dead, Yoko is dead, and Karen could be next. Her boyfriend goes to the house to look for her, and after seeing her research, so she runs over there to try to save him. Karen is seeing things as she sees Bill Pullman inside the house talking to his wife before he enters the same room that Michelle did earlier in the movie. She follows ghost Bill Pullman as he finds more pictures with the faces of the woman cut out. He also finds a journal to learn that the woman in this house was obsessed with him. She had a crush to the umpteenth degree.
This is a level of thirst I don't think we can quantify. It's surpassed thirst. What would you even call that?
Obsession.
I feel like she was even more obsessed than Ollie Lauder in Obsessed. So what do you call it?
Something was mentally unstable with that woman. Nah. She saw that white American man. She wanted it. Like, woman, you got to be better than this. Yeah. You got a kid. You got a husband at home.
Nah.
Tighten up.
But I need Peter, though.
Yeah, tighten up. So ghost Bill Pullman continues to investigate, and he finds the woman's dead body in the closet from earlier. We finally get the whole story as we see that the husband snaps after finding the journal. All the creepy ghosts come together, and Karen has finally had enough as she kicks over the gas cans and lights the house on fire. How do you feel about this scene? You can feel it. This is the end of the movie. Mm-hmm. The boyfriend is there. Karen is there. It's only about 15 minutes left in this movie, and there's gas cans earlier from when the detective goes over here. How do you feel about this ending to the movie?
How did Doug get put in such a catatonic state immediately? He just walked into the house. Everyone else that happened, I mean, I don't understand how she puts them in a catatonic state before she takes them anyway. At least they've been there a few days, weeks, couple weeks, months, whatever, before it happens. Doug was there all of 20, 30 minutes. He's already gone. And then she waits until Karen gets there to physically take him. Like, she lets her watch him be taken. Like you said, she kicks the gas can over, the hand grabs her, and then she still managed to throw the lighter. I don't know. It's silly.
She had great strength, though. I got to give her that. I mean, I see NFL quarterbacks all the time. They don't get that throw off.
Nah, she was out here Michael Vick with the lighter. just the wrist flick.
It was crazy. Karen survives the fire. She's now in the hospital. She also learns that the house survives in the fire. I have no clue how the house survives in the fire.
They probably have the greatest fire department in the world to get there in time to put the house out and save Karen before everything is scorched earth.
She had two gas cans there and a lighter. That thing is going up.
It should have been, it should have been a fireball that eviscerated her to start.
How did she? She didn't really have no burns or nothing on her.
No, I mean, she had a bruise on her head and her hand wrapped, and that was it. And the hand wrap was probably from Kyoko grabbing her more so than the fire.
Kyoko is not dead and is still following her around, which is a clear, hey, we think this movie's going to do good. Let's give ourselves some room to do a sequel. That's what the last scene of this movie is.
Sequel bait.
100%. Hey, if this movie does well, we can do another one. If the movie we kind of leave it open-ended. This was a staple of the mid-2000s. Let's give ourselves room to do another one.
Well, The Ring had already done as well as it did. I think they probably already had a sequel coming along the way. And then you had all that source material to work with. So at this point, they're like, even if it doesn't do that well, we're still going to go ahead and make the sequel because I'm pretty sure people will come see it. There was no way that they weren't going to set that up at the end.
So on Rotten Tomatoes, this movie has a 41% with an average rating of 5.1 out of 10. The website's consensus reads, quote, "There's some creepy imagery to be found, but not much in the way of logic or truly jarring scenes." I think where this movie kind of falls behind a movie like The Ring is I don't really think there's like a defining moment or character or kind of scene in this movie that kind of sets it apart. I think it's a fine movie. Like, you and I were in high school when this came out. This was a fine movie to go see, but watching it now 20 years later, I don't think the movie's very memorable today.
Well, I think I have a theory as to why it's like. I think the reason is because they're trying to capitalize on the success of The Ring, which was based on a Japanese movie. But even though The Ring is also a shot-for-shot remake, they took a lot of artistic differences to at least make it stand out. So, you know, they made it green, and, you know, they actually had it, that green hue that it has. And then, you know, they actually sold out and brought the cast to America and had an American cast and kept going versus The Grudge. It's a shot-for-shot remake. The person that wrote and directed the Japanese one directed the American one. It's still set in Japan. You just swap out a few of the characters for American actors. And then, you know, you don't do anything to set it aside. And so you're trying to tell this exact same story using some of the same shots. It just didn't translate well. There was a whole lot of Japanese cultural stuff that they tried to still keep in. And I think that probably kind of made it where, but not much in the way of logic.
Do you think that this movie even gets greenlit if The Ring wasn't so successful? So The Ring came out in 2002, had a much bigger budget, $48 million. The Ring does $250 million in the box office. So The Ring is a smashing success. Do you think we even get to The Grudge in 04 if The Ring flops?
No, I think a whole lot of these ports don't happen if The Ring flops. The Grudge, One Missed Call, Shudder, Quarantine, which I think was American version of Wreck. Like, I think a lot of these don't happen if The Ring doesn't. If I remember the order correct, all these movies, if The Ring doesn't do as well as it does, a lot of these don't get remade.
You might be shocked to hear this, but Roger Ebert did not like The Grudge. He gives this movie 1 star out of 4, writing, quote, "I'm not sure how most of the scenes fit into the movie. I do, however, understand the underlying premise. There is a haunted house, and everyone who enters it will have unspeakable things happen to them." Kevin Thomas of the Los Angeles Times says, quote, a convoluted plot makes it hard for the viewer to track the action and to become involved with any of the characters, including Sarah Michelle Gellar's perfectly nice, perfectly ordinary student. This makes it all the harder to go along with the haunted house horrors that ensnare her. I will say this, and Sarah Michelle Gellar is a 2000s and late 90s queen. I think a big difference with The Ring is The Ring's main character is a far better actress than what Sarah Michelle Gellar gives you. Sarah Michelle Gellar's character in this just doesn't really give you anything. You needed somebody to sell this movie to American audiences, so you pick somebody where if you're under the age of 25, who is somebody that would get you to the box office? Because, like, Bill Pullman isn't getting you to the box office. Like, this movie works because of how popular Sarah Michelle Gellar was in 2004.
Now, Sarah Michelle Gellar, correct me, that she was Buffy, right?
Yes.
Okay, so she was Buffy.
She's also in Scooby-Doo, so she was hot around this time.
Right, so I feel like a lot of that had to be just poor direction. The direction not translating. Because, like I said, it's the same person that directed the original movie. So he knows how to direct movies, and he knows how to direct that movie. He wrote it. Sam Raimi just produced it.
So, I'll never forgive Sam Raimi for what he did to the Spider-Man series. I'll never forgive that man.
You hate Sam Raimi because of that third movie.
It scarred me for life. Spider-Man 3 scarred me for life.
No, you wanted smoke with Sam ever since that third movie came
out. I don't
out.
Support Sam Raimi. And if he's listening to this podcast, I don't like you, and I want you to know that.
As much disdain as I have for that third movie, I like his touch on horror movies too much to just completely blacklist him. I can't do it.
You know, I loved Spider-Man 1 and 2. I've never been more excited for a movie than I was for Spider-Man 3. It was Black Spider-Man. It was Venom. It was the perfect end to the Tobey Maguire era. And Sam Raimi ruined it.
I'll
never forgive him.
I don't know how he fumbled that, but Sam Raimi gave us the Evil Dead, though, too. So I'm like, I can't just do him like that completely. I'm mad about it, but I'll give him a little slack just because of his horror movie presence.
All right, what do you think this movie gets right 20 years later?
I think that this movie gets some of the shot recreations right. Like I said, the elevator scene with the sister. Really, that's about it. The scene with the sister, I think, was great. Her at work, trying to get away. Security guard going to check, the elevator, her getting pulled in the bed. I think all that was perfect. The rest of it's kind of eh. And like you said, I don't know, something about Sarah Michelle Gellar's, she just seemed real wooden or cardboard in the whole movie. Like she's not giving you anything.
I'm going to say what this movie gets right is I think that American teenagers have always been fascinated by Japanese pop culture.
Absolutely.
You think about Dragon Ball Z. You think about Pokemon. You think of anime. You just think of American teenagers have always been fascinated. And even somebody who, like, never really got into anime, like, you can see the adaptation, and it feels like they stay very true to the source material. Like, they are telling a Japanese story. And the movie never tries to be anything else. I think that's an enjoyable part of this film.
But I think they stay true to it to a fault. Like, I'm all for keeping it as close to the source material as possible. But I think you still have to do some kind of cultural switch-ups just so the people that you do have going to see the movie kind of understand a lot better. I mean, as you could tell just from reading the reviews, like, the people who watch movies for a living couldn't even tell that it was told out of order. Like, you can, just the way that they wrote their reviews, it just seemed like that part of it even went over their head. And it's not like that's a strictly Japanese thing. I mean, Quentin Tarantino tells his movies out of order a lot of the time, but I guess in this particular instance, they just didn't. It didn't hit for them. It hurts the movie a lot.
What do you think the movie gets wrong?
That opening scene.
With Bill Pullman, yeah. When he does the header.
Yeah. The opening scene definitely is an L in my book. And then just not setting itself apart enough to make it attract the audience in. Give them a chance to enjoy the movie for what it is.
I think the plot's a little confusing. I think it takes a little bit too long to explain kind of what's going on in the movie. Why is the cat important? Who is this little boy? Like, we don't find that out until very, very late in the movie. Maybe that is just a device of a horror movie, but I would have liked some of those questions answered I would have liked a little bit more information early in the movie. The movie eventually gives you all this information. By the time you get the information, the movie's over.
if they were going to do a shot for shot, I think one thing that they probably should have kept that would have helped American audiences, they had little title cards at the beginning of each section to kind of at least let you know whose story you telling at the current moment. So, and they left that out of here. So they didn't tell you that, okay, this section is Yoko. This section is Rachel. This section is whatever the, what is it, Detective Yaganawa. Like, they didn't do any of that. They just kind of kept it like it is linear, but it clearly wasn't. And I think that probably didn't help either.
This movie is rated a 5.9 on IMDb. Is that too much, too little, or just right for The Grudge?
I think that's fair. I think that 5 to 5.9 range, I would probably rate it closer to 5.4 maybe, but...
Yeah, I'm going to go a little bit too high. I'm kind of where you are in this one. I think somewhere between a 5.4 to 5.6 is about where I would put it. I don't think you can put it in the 6 range. I looked up The Ring. The Ring is a 7.1. This movie is not close to me to what I think The Ring was. 5.4, 5.6 to me feels about fair. I cannot put this in the 6 range. That's how I would rank The Grudge. This was another episode of the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast, where we believe that everybody has a favorite bad movie. The only thing you must do is that we have to watch a movie rated below a 6.0 on IMDb. I have to remind you guys, in a couple of days, we are going to randomly pick one of your favorite scary movies. So check the Instagram bio, fill out the movie request form. You are going to pick the last movie of the month. So be sure to do that. Josh, I appreciate you coming in, man. We've been talking about you coming on the podcast for a while, man.
I know. I really appreciate you having me, especially for a movie that I as bad as it is, I kind of hold it dear because, you know, I just enjoy that whole era.
You know what? Whenever it's close to the ACT time, let's do the perfect score.
I'm here for it.
Let's do the perfect score. Love the perfect score.
Love that movie.
What a movie. All right. We'll catch you guys next week on the Bad Movies Worst Opinions podcast.